Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying the ghost stories here on this show, be sure to check out our true crime podcast called True Crime Today. Search it wherever you download podcasts. Myself, Carol Hughes, Stacey Cole, all discuss the latest in many true crime stories, dark, disturbing, and sometimes just plain crazy. Check it out, True Crime Today. Search and press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. Here's a preview of one of this week's episodes of True Crime Today. A Minnesota mom accused of shooting a 6-year-old son several times and leaving a body in a trunk. Atlanta pastor found stabbed to death, burned by a man recently released from prison she was ministering to. And no merits as a federal judge in denying Josh Duggar's motion for a new trial.
This is True Crime Today.
Not only a tragedy for the family.
It's unfathomable.
Shot to death more than half a dozen times, likely with a shotgun by his own mother.
True Crime Today.
So he then drove her body in her van about 5 miles away.
Police say she put her newborn in a trash bag and threw the baby over an upstairs banister.
A podcast that examines real stories in real time.
Disturbing.
He says she asked him to help her end her life.
True Crime Today. Starts now.
Well, indeed it does. Welcome to the program. And you may notice there's a new name to the program. Same show. Nothing's changing. I just thought, you know, let's just change the name up a little bit, be a little more definitive of what we're doing here as the show has kind of evolved over the years from talking about Wikipedia dark stories and now mainly focusing on true crime. So welcome to True Crime Today. Same show. Different name. It's Tony and Carol Hughes with you on today's episode of the program.
It feels so different. It won't be once we start talking, but no. The intro part sure did. I like that.
Yeah, I put that together this afternoon. I was like, I've been thinking about this. I've been pondering changing the name. And I'm like, yeah, let's just do it long term because, well, honestly, it was coming to mind because I'm going to do basically a station vehicle and have my truck wrapped with our logos and such. And I was thinking, you know, I've been thinking about doing that. What do I want to do? I got to decide right now because I don't want to have to redo the truck.
Once you do that, you're stuck like that for a while.
So I thought, okay, we're just going to do it. And so I put it all together today and updated everything. And there you go. And Dark Side Of, formerly Dark Side Of. It's a True Crime Today. We're not going to say formerly all the time like Prince, though. So.
Yeah, because that just gets old.
The man formerly
because
known.
Prince, although that was a little bit different because it was like he's now this thing,
yeah.
And so the only way you could ever identify him was to say what he didn't want you to say.
Yeah. Didn't he eventually just go right back to like Prince, or did he maintain the symbol thing?
No, he ended up going back. I think he did anyway.
Okay.
But the symbol thing, it's like okay, if you want to be known by a symbol. You know, when we're communicating, you know, if I'm looking at you, I could say, you know, the artist.
Yeah.
And I could do it with my finger, like air sign it. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking, you know, and I'm trying to tell you who I wonder, you know, the guy who used to be Prince.
I wonder if this will be a new thing. People that will change their names and identify by symbols. And no audible language. And then we'll be upset when people don't address them correctly.
Oh, my God. What pronouns does that?
It's not even a pronoun thing.
I don't even know what to call that.
And it's not even a pronoun thing. It's like literally changing your name to a symbol that is not audible. It's going to happen. And it's going to be like, you know, and then you got to like do almost like half sign language, half speaking. And you got to move your hand around and like whatever their sign is or whatever bullshit they're, you know, because that's how they're going to, you know, feel special and the world's not persecuting them. So, yeah, I think that'll happen and it will be totally fucking insane. just like so many other things.
I just can't. Speaking of totally insane,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't even know what to call this person this week, because sometimes I say, this is the asshole of the week or the dick of the week or whatever of the week. I don't even know.
You don't have a descriptive word?
I don't. So that I thought, I'm just going to tell you this person who I think's the worst person in the world.
Okay.
And then I think between the two of us, we can come up with a name.
All right.
So this guy, and you have another church story tonight too, but this guy's a 65-year-old Indiana church pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Told his congregation that he sinned by committing adultery about 2 decades ago in front of the congregation. And so I don't know if it was after church or what, and he was going to step down. So this was New Life Christian Church and World Outreach in Warsaw, Indiana. So he says, quote, to say it plainly, I didn't make a mistake. I didn't have an issue. I didn't have an affair. I didn't make a misjudgment. I sinned. I need to say that, and you deserve to hear that, he said. So then the pastor asked the congregation to forgive him for the deep wound he caused, explaining that there was no good reason why it took so long to come forward. To my wife and family, who I deeply hurt, I've confessed my sin, and they have graciously forgiven me and expressed their love to me. So then he announced after that little speech that he's stepping down from the ministry and received a round of applause from the congregation. But things turned much more awkward moments later when a woman stepped toward the microphone along with the man who was her husband, and she said, for 27 years, I lived in a prison. It was not 20 years. I was just 16 when you took my virginity on your office floor. Do you remember that?
Oh,
I know you do.
God.
She said, I lived in a prison of lies and pain, lying to protect the low family, his family. I thought I was a horrible person, having suicidal thoughts, not realizing what he had truly done to me. The church deserves to know the truth. The church has been built on lies, but no more. The lies need to stop. So she said that right after he did. So what happened was she kept it to herself. And like a couple weeks ago, her older brother went to her and said, you know, I saw you lying in bed with a pastor, and you were wearing just a t-shirt and underwear, and you were just a teenager. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to discuss it.
Yeah.
And she was like, and she did what a lot of young girls do, especially when they're teenagers. And, you know, if he was her pastor, and she convinces herself that, you know, any number of things, that he does love her, they are in a relationship, God wants them to do it, especially when the church is involved, it becomes a really mixed bag of emotions.
Yeah.
Because this is your church and your parents go to this church. And how do you speak out against this guy? Everybody, I mean, you shouldn't worship your pastor, but everybody really does have, for the most part, strong feelings towards their pastor.
Sure.
Very connected to their pastor. So, yeah, he stepped down. So I just have to wonder if that's what he told his wife. And the husband said, it's not just adultery. It's another level when it's a teenage girl. I will not let this man talk about my wife like that. It happened for 9 years.
So he's downplaying it and being like, how? And he does it in the presence of her as well. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, you know, and my guess, you know, I don't know if maybe his guilt caught up with him. I don't know what prompted all of this. Whoa. In a statement, the church said this long-held secret first came to light when a woman in the church came forward and disclosed the relationship to various people within the church. So I'm wondering if that woman spoke out before then. And then it was just to a few people
that
got to him.
And the rumors were flying. And then,
so then he's like, you know what? I'm just going to step down.
Yep.
I had an adulterous relationship.
So there is the reason why he came forward after 20 years, because he finally got busted. Yeah, because it seems rather weird that like suddenly he had some sort of revelation 20 years later, like, oh, shit, I should probably step down for this and talk about it. I mean, at that point, if you're wanting to just get away from it, then I think you would just step down and not say anything about it. Kind of drift off to somewhere else.
But the church also expressed its support for the former pastor and his family. Quote, as healing occurs in their hearts, their marriage and family, we are committed to demonstrating the same support, encouragement, counsel, and forgiveness that has come to define the collective heart and ministry of this body.
Okay.
That just makes me so mad. And, you know, and I, you know, this is someone you probably, you know, my guess is they didn't want to believe this woman.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't.
No.
But, and I totally get it. And, like, as women, we blame ourselves.
And we're also talking 20 years ago at a time where it really, where it really wasn't said. Yeah. I mean.
And it went on for a long time. So my guess is it continued, you know, after she was, if it started when she was 16, you know, and went on for 9 years, she was 25. So in his mind, she was 25 years old.
Yeah.
So he was having adultery. An adulterous relationship. And when, who knows how it started, but frequently, you know, girls that age are groomed and it's just,
yeah.
And, you know, you're the pastor, you're in a powerful position within that church.
Yeah, totally.
And you owe it to your congregation to be the person they all think you are.
Well,
you know, when you're up there preaching and you're the leader of these people. Like, I just, I always get upset when I hear stories like that.
I'm sure.
So anyway, I don't know what to call him.
I don't know. Asshole of the week.
The only word I could come up with, really, the only term I could come up with was motherfucker.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Sinner of the century.
Sinner of the week.
Sinner of
There's
the
so
week.
There's so many of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's just funny. Like, he tries to downplay it one way. It almost sounds like something out of a fucking TV show or like some sort of drama. It really does.
So the word got out and then he's like, well, I guess I better resign from the church. Word got out. I had an adulterous relationship. So she's sitting there and she's like, oh, no, 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 no. That's not what that was.
Way to read your audience, too. You know, where it's like you're up
read
there.
The room.
And it's like. Oh, shit. Like, she's right in front. Maybe I shouldn't make this statement today. Maybe this is just not the right time. Maybe do a fucking YouTube video. But maybe not where she's right in the same room. And if she realizes, or obviously she would realize that you are lying out of your ass and downplaying this, you may upset her enough to come and retaliate. But no, he went ahead and just...
And I have no way of knowing this, but my gut feeling on this is that she had blamed herself and they had he loved her. They were in a relationship. Like, that's what we tell ourselves, you know, well, it's like, he does love me. And then probably when the relationship stopped, he had a long conversation with her about it. And, and then she stayed part of the church and kept her mouth shut. Because he probably said, you know, if you tell people about this, I will lose everything. And then what? It will be all your fault. And so she probably never said anything until she had an honest conversation with her brother that no, none of that was okay. And it might have taken all those years for her to understand what had really happened to her.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah.
Then they'll find another church.
Exactly. And they'll forgive him. It'll be okay. Minnesota mom accused of shooting the 6-year-old son several times and leaving body in the trunk. They have confirmed the identity. Family members have confirmed the name of the boy whose body was found in the trunk of the car. Eli Hart was 6 years old at the time of his death. The Honorable Police Department identified the woman arrested in relation to the death investigation. Julissa Thaler, 28 years old, is currently being held in Hennepin County Jail for probable cause of murder. She has yet to be formally charged. Josie Jofferson, the fiance of Eli's father, Tori Hart, spoke to 5 Eyewitness News by phone. She identified Thaler as Eli's mother. I guess we're just doing the best we can, Josephson said. Tori and I are grieving our separate ways. He's still trying to absorb this. To him, it's really hard to believe that this is real, that he'll never see Eli again. Eli was the sweetest kid. Anyone who knew Eli just fell in love with him. He was always happy. The superintendent of the West Tonka Public Schools says a child in the school district is believed to be the victim of the homicide investigation. A letter sent to families and staff was sent out yesterday. It's horrifying and difficult to process a tragedy of this magnitude, especially in our close-knit community. Orono police said that they found the boy's body inside the car trunk on Friday morning in Mound while responding to a report of a car that had smashed back window and a tire that was being driven on its rim. Female driver of the car and a man who was detained at an apartment complex in Spring Park were both taken into custody, police said. Police said they believe the woman driving the car is believed to be the primary suspect and that the child's death is domestic related. So there you go.
There has to be drugs involved in that.
You would hope so. I mean, that's like the only thing.
You've got a body in your trunk. You're driving with your back windshield busted out and you're on the rims.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know where that would ever pass.
Where
for,
are
like,
you going like that?
Yeah.
If you're driving on the rim, you could get there faster by walking.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is just so sick.
You said, where are they going? We could have jumped into Highway to Hell from.
That's where she's going.
Highway to Hell.
Oh, and that poor child.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I don't get. If, you know, there's, I don't think foster care is good, but at all. But at least a child would have a chance at a life.
It's fucked up because we're almost like saying, like, at least they're not dead, which is true. But yeah, at the same point, that system needs so much fucking reform. It's insane.
They need good, honest, healthy families to step up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And it's not easy to do. I'm not saying like, oh, everybody's great candidate for being a foster family. That's not it. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it's just heartbreaking, you know, like, wasn't there a family member or someone she could have left the child? You know, people love the kid.
The things you get, I really feel this way. I feel like we've gone down the rabbit hole of insanity for several generations now. That you have, you know, people who were brought up with absolutely horrible, neglectful parents, abusive parents, then they had kids. And then they had kids. And it's gone to this, like, depth now where there isn't, like, necessarily the good family member or the grandma or the grandpa or the aunt or the uncle somewhere that gives a shit or is remotely competent enough to do anything. Now, in some cases, yeah, there certainly is. But I think in a lot of circles like this, it doesn't fucking exist. And
right. It's
just, it's idiocracy. If you've ever seen the movie, we are fucking living in idiocracy. We got there even faster than I thought we would. But that's what it is. And if that's all you know, if you don't have the intelligence, if you don't have, you know, the toolbox to work with that would tell you there's something wrong here or we need help or this or that, you don't have it.
It just makes me think they had to have been high. Because
on
it's
something,
like, you know, like having a busted out back window, you're going to get pulled over for that.
Yeah.
But when you're driving on your rim, you're going to get pulled over. That's because somebody called them in. It's like, they saw it. Like, I'm driving behind this car. They got a busted out back window and they're driving on the rim.
Yeah.
You know? But you're doing that with a body in the back of the car?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, look, just pull me over. I mean, of course they're going to pull you over immediately and look in your car. They're going to pull you out and they're going to search your car.
Mm-hmm.
Because it looks highly suspicious. That's so sad.
I don't know. I mean, there's so many weird things. I want to find the part in here about the shooting, because that really wasn't identified so much in that version of the story. I'm not finding it readily, but it's just insane. Shooting the 6-year-old son several times, throwing him in the back of the truck. And yeah, I mean, what the fuck? So, okay. So this is, you know, almost, this is like crazy zombie-like behavior that we're seeing with this person. I was watching some video yesterday from, there was a tornado in Gaylord, Michigan, which is actually kind of up by where I used to do a morning show in Traverse City. I actually dated a girl from Gaylord at one point in time in my life. Just a little town, kind of a quaint little cute place, but freaking massive tornado. They normally don't get tornadoes up there like that.
Yeah.
And the video is, I mean, all of the different shots of it, quite striking. But there were some where people were literally just walking down the road as the tornado behind them. You see like cars flying, you see massive pieces of metal flying over the road. Like if you just turned around, you'd see this and certainly you would hear it. And this one guy is walking down the road and his hat goes flying off and he's just sipping on his drink. And he just keeps, and he kind of like looks and like, where'd my hat go? And then like shrugs his shoulders and then just kind of keeps lurching forward as if nothing is going on. I was waiting for like a big piece of shrapnel to just fly by and cut him in half. But I there was a couple people like that in these shots. And they were just like zombies.
They, you know, though, they did that here with that tornado a month or so ago. Yeah. Like, there's so many videos, incredible videos and pictures. But yeah. I'm like, what were y'all, my people I work with? I'm like, what were you doing outside?
And it's one,
that tornado is a half a mile as a bird flies. Like, that was really close.
And I have a better understanding for people who are doing, trying to film it. I mean, I think it's a very risky proposition. But it's different when you're not filming anything. You're just having your icy, who God knows what else is in the icy, and you're walking down the sidewalk, and literally a piece of shrapnel, a sign, the stop sign that just blew off in front of you, could go flying at you.
I can't believe they were even able to just continue walking.
They did. And they were kind of get blown around a little bit, but he just kept walking like there was nothing going on.
Sorry, I'm drunk.
I don't even.
And I'm having a hard time standing up for some reason.
Like, this is new. This is new to these natural disaster stuff. It used to be you see people fleeing and running. Now you see people utterly oblivious to what's going on around them.
Well, they're like, the poor guy's like, man, I didn't think I drank that much.
There's a lot of meth problems.
Walk.
There's a lot of meth problems.
You can't walk because the wind is blowing 90 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's crazy shit.
I know. Utterly insane. So, yeah, that was that fine lady. Hey, Duggar's back in the news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to that. He, I believe by the time this airs, he may be already sentenced. Yeah, it is one day before, because he's getting sentenced tomorrow. We're recording this on Tuesday. This will be airing Friday. So I'm curious as to what the sentencing is. But one day before Josh Duggar will appear in court for sentencing on his child pornography conviction, Judge Timothy L. Brooks issued a ruling on the defense's request for a judgment or acquittal or a new trial. In a 29-page ruling handed down in the Western District of Arkansas Federal Court in Fayetteville, Duggar's request for an acquittal or a new trial was denied. The memorandum opinion and order began by recounting the charges against Duggar and the result of his trial, unanimous guilty verdict in December of 2021. The court notes that immediately following the verdict, the defense made two oral motions for acquittal under the Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 29, both of which were denied from the bench. The defense then filed a similar motion under Rule 29, arguing that there was no evidence of mens rea from the jury that could base its guilty verdict. The defense filing requested either an acquittal on these grounds or alternatively a new trial due to the government's alleged failure to timely disclose certain evidence and the court's ruling on witness testimony. The document continued with the court explaining the legal standards that would be required to rule in the defense's favor. One key point is that when reviewing the sufficiency of evidence to support a conviction, the court must resolve evidentiary conflicts in the government's favor and accept all reasonable inferences from the evidence that supports the verdict. The verdict will only be overturned if no reasonable jury could have found the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. It adds, further, the ruling notes that the district court will only set aside the verdict if the evidence weighs heavily enough against the verdict that some miscarriage of justice may have occurred. The previous defense filing stated that the court should enter a judgment of acquittal because the jury was not presented evidence sufficient to show he actually viewed any child pornography. Today's ruling stated that this agreement lacks merit. There is ample evidence he viewed the images of child pornography that had been downloaded to his business computer, the judge states. He goes on to cite the testimony of the prosecution's first witness, a Little Rock undercover police officer, that first connected to Duggar via peer-to-peer file sharing software. He then went to summarize the testimony of the government's forensics expert, James Fortell of the Department of Justice, who explained that Duggar had partitioned the hard drive into two sections. Fortell detailed the explicit nature of the illegal files and confirmed that images and videos were viewed on the computer. The ruling added that the defense's own computer forensics expert agreed. Ms. Bush concluded during cross-examination that the images were unzipped, placed in a folder on the desktop, and then opened an image viewer all at the exact same time and second, the ruling says. Judge Brooks then called a specific piece of evidence summoned by the prosecution as a coup de grace. The document in question was a timeline summarizing 50 or 60 exhibits of forensic evidence recovered from Mr. Duggar's HP desktop, iPhone 11, iPhone 8, and MacBook. So he's got it all over the place.
Jesus Christ.
The evidence.
But, I really would like another trial.
Please. But we found.
You can't prove it.
We found some evidence on your iPhone 11. Just on my computer. We found it there too. Shit. And the 8.
Yeah, well, don't I have another phone. The 8. No, we found it there too.
We got that one too. Shit. Your MacBook? We got that one too. You're good. You're not good, but you're good. The evidence summarized in Exhibit 85 places Mr. Duggar at the car lot on May 13th, 2019, during the local installation of the Linux partition and operating system. And during May 14th through the 16th, 2019, at times the child pornography was downloaded to the HP desktop, he adds. Based on the court's discussion of trial evidence above, there is no merit to Mr. Duggar's argument in favor of acquittal. There was significant evidence presented at a trial to convince a reasonable jury that Mr. Duggar was physically present during the offense conduct and that he had the mens rea to commit these crimes. What do they always have to like speak in Latin and shit?
They had the mens rea.
Mens rea. According to request for relief, Rule 29 is denied. The next session specifically addressed a request for a new trial. They're just kind of throwing shit at the wall here. First, the ruling discussed emails sent by Caleb Williams, someone the defense mentioned by name during opening arguments as a potential suspect. The defense promise of an alternative perpetrator came to nothing, as the evidence at trial showed that Mr. Duggar and only Mr. Duggar was physically present at the car lot when child pornography was being downloaded, the document notes. How shitty is this of this uber Christian family or whatever the fuck they are? They're not real Christians. To then try and throw this other person under the bus. Like, it could be Caleb. You look at Caleb. Especially, like, if he has nothing to do with it. Like, don't catch me, but what about Caleb over there? Fuck that.
Well, I think that Josh Duggar has zero issues doing that. And if that strategy would have worked, I think he'd have been just fine with it.
I think if I was Caleb, I'd sue them for defamation of character. And just try and take their whole fucking family out.
That's just messed up.
Yeah. The defense's promise of an alternative perpetrator came to nothing, as the evidence at trial showed that Mr. Duggar and only... Okay, he was present. The judge summarizes Williams' emails in depth, observing that Mr. Duggar does not explain or quantify the nature of any prejudice associated with 5 or 6 delays in the government's disclosure of this email, adding that, more to the point, the information was not substantially new to the defense. Mr. Duggar had identified Mr. Williams as a potential witness and later subpoenaed him to testify at trial. Continuing, the judge stated that the emails in question did not contain anything exculpatory, as the defense claimed in their motion. It does not contain any information that would suggest Mr. Williams was physically present at the car lot when child pornography was downloaded. And the defense was unable to point the jury to any forensic evidence of remote access on the Linux side of the computer. He added the judge also noted that Williams was in the state of Illinois at the time the illegal documents occurred or downloads occurred. Another objection the defense made in their filing was that Duggar was constitutionally deprived of the ability to call Caleb William as a necessary witness. The judge noted that the defense was notified at least 2 weeks prior to the trial that Williams would need to establish a non-speculative evidentiary foundation to testify. Judge Brooks then explains that in a meeting in chambers during the trial, he addressed the situation and that he had reiterated his ruling that Duggar was free to suggest that someone else might have committed the crimes, but that the evidence needed to meet a certain minimum threshold of reliability and could not be tantamount to wild finger pointing. So the judge is even like, that's exactly what you're doing. In that meeting, the prosecution argued that the defense only wanted to call Williams to the stand because of his recent sex offense. Okay, well, that's he's not so lovely. He had a recent sex offense conviction, which could leave a false impression that he might be a viable alternative perpetrator. So that's why he wanted to point at him, because he knew that if they could get that going, it'd all go away from Josh.
Well, I think Josh was perfectly fine throwing somebody under the bus.
Yeah.
I don't think he had any issues with that.
The ruling that includes a portion of transcript from the meeting in the chambers concluding with the judge telling the defense that under no circumstance are you to get any prior sex offense history that he has without approaching the bench. Wow. So this is interesting. They just kind of keep going on and on and on about, you know, well, it could be this, it could be that. So the court found no merit and, looks like he will be getting his sentencing on the 25th, which if you are subscribed to this, you probably already know it because I'm sure we covered it, in a True Crime Today, brief that goes out every day, but.
So messed up. But I think as the defense lawyer, if you don't, now I totally disagree with them trying to throw somebody else under the bus. I just think that's shady ass shit.
Yeah.
But like, asking for a new trial and all that, they have to do that, because if they don't, like, then he can come back and say, I had inadequate.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're trying to do right now. They're trying to look at poke and prod at any technicality.
At least his defense attorney is doing all of this stuff. So, you know, a year from now, he can't be like, yeah, well, they didn't do this or this or this. Yeah. I mean, that'll be hard for him.
Yeah, they're trying to do it right now.
They're doing all those things.
Yep.
But I think it would be so hard to be a defense attorney, because it's like you have to know the evidence. And there has to be like even some party that goes, this guy is a sick.
Yeah.
I want to say motherfucker, so I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, you can say it.
But he is, you know, and yet your job is to defend him and find these shady ass reasons to defend him.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, I might not really think that other guy did it, but maybe it'll work.
That's why
we'll send that guy to prison instead. Yeah.
That's why I could never be an attorney, because I mean, I could argue well, but the thing is I could never do that.
And the prosecutor, you know, man, you couldn't pay me enough to work those kind of hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think they get paid a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a labor of love.
If they do.
If it's kind of, I think it's one of those things where if you love it, you love it. And it's most of your life.
I think they get paid well. I don't think, you know, they're making $40,000 a year. But I think for the hours you have to put in.
Yeah.
And the stress you have to go through and the things that you have to see.
Yeah. It would certainly take its toll. You know, I think the goal would be then to eventually move on to private practice and make some money there. But yeah.
And I was reading about Josh Duggar earlier this week, because they had, you know, all these people writing letters for him, you know, like what a great guy he is. You know, there was one time, like he like bought somebody a car. Yeah. But if they would have shown him child pornography, he'd have been happy to look at that.
Exactly.
You know, I'm like, one thing doesn't offset the other. Like, oh my God, he went to church? He looked at really disgusting child pornography? That doesn't quite seem so bad.
It just wipes it all away.
That isn't how that works.
No.
And it's like, you know, it's like, write a letter for me and tell him what a great person I am.
Yeah.
Who does what? Looks at child porn at work?
Well, they're operating from the mindset of that's not true. That's the thing. They don't believe it's true. So to them, it's not. So that doesn't even kind of go into their equation.
But I'm thinking about like a judge. Would they really be like, no, the judge, I've seen all this evidence.
Sure, like, the judge is just like, that's fucking great.
Oh my gosh, he's a good Christian.
It's the same letters.
I think I'm going to take it easy on him.
It'd be easy to look at. It's the same letters from the same brainwashed people. And that's what it is. And you go, all right, thank you for your mail. That's great. I'm glad we got 37. What does the stamp cost now? 37? What is this? I have no idea.
No, it's like 51 or 52 or something.
I think the last time I like actually paid attention to a stamp cost, it was 37 cents. So that was a while ago.
I think it goes up like every other month, I swear.
Yeah, I didn't even, I just like buy like the book and I didn't even know what it costs anymore. Here's another one. Atlanta pastor, this is your feel-good story of the week, and I'm saying that as sarcastically as possible. Atlanta pastor found stabbed to death, burned by man, recently released from prison that she was ministering to. An Atlanta pastor was found stabbed to death and burned inside a car, allegedly by a man recently released from prison that she was ministering to. DeKalb County police are investigating the homicide that took place Wednesday night in Lithonia. The victim was identified as 57-year-old Marietta Harrell, who was stabbed at a residence in the 1300 block of Panola Road, according to police. The story is from 11 Alive. Harrell is identified as on the church website as the pastor of the Connections at Metropolitan UMC Church in Atlanta. She was transported to the 1600 block of Coffee Road, where her deceased body was later found in a vehicle by police. Police said they arrested a suspect, Christopher Griggs, Thursday, and currently have them in custody at DeKalb County Jail. Records show he faces charges including malice murder and first-degree arson. According to a police report, Harold's husband, Antonio, was tracking her phone location because he was worried about her meeting with the man. The husband made the unthinkable discovery of killing... The husband made the unthinkable discovery of her killing. There we go. When he used the phone tracking to locate her minivan, according to the report. The report said he had told his wife not to meet any more people who have just been released from jail for safety reasons.
Sorry. Like that you would ever have to say that out loud.
You think?
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, not that she's... But,
I mean, it's one thing meeting them in prison and ministering to them there. That's good. That's a nice thing to do when you're trying to help them. But once they get out, like, that's a bad idea.
When you're meeting under the 81 interchange, it's probably not a great place. The report goes on to state a friend had also warned her about such meetings, but Harrell said she wanted to help people who have been in jail. There's ways of doing that in a way that's not going to get you killed. According to her Connections at Metropolitan Bio, Harrell has lived in Atlanta for more than 30 years, has had a husband of 27 years and two daughters, age 18 and 5. Harrell graduated from Emory's Callender School of Theology with a Master of Divinity degree in 2014. Her bio states she describes herself as a child of God who daily seeks to grow in her walk with God. Just obviously a horribly sad story, something that truly could have been prevented. You know, I get, you know, you want to go down and help, but you know, if we're going to go, well, God will protect me. I think more so God gave you a brain to think, not safe, not a good idea. Well, let's do this in a more organized way.
And I don't understand, like, and I think, you know, maybe if you're meeting them in prison and you've kind of gotten to know them and you think it's like, oh, well, he's a great guy. You know, a lot of those people, once they walk out the door, it's a whole different story. Yeah. Like they're doing all that stuff to make it look good so they can get out.
Mm-hmm.
That's, oh, I just don't get it. Like, how would you not know that?
You have to think that she would. I don't know if she's just done it so many times. She thinks she was protected, or she just, you know, thought if that's my time to go, that's my time to go. I don't know. Which that to me is a weird way of thinking.
When you have kids, that's so. Yeah. It's sad to me that if that was the mindset,
that's fucked up. If you have kids,
that you have kids, and you'd be like, well, you know, these people are more important than my own kids.
Yeah, that's
kind of what it says to them. But I don't know that that's what happened.
Well, I mean, it may not be what is intended to say, but it's more
but
so
it's
shown.
What she did by her actions.
It's shown by actions. Exactly. That's my point.
Wow.
So, no. So there you go. Another fine, fine story for you here.
That was just so uplifting.
Here on True Crime Today. And that is going to wrap up today's episode of the program. Thank you guys for listening. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any episodes of True Crime Today. For Carol, Tony, thanks for listening.